So we have now the third part of the seminar, and we will hear now about another demon, and this is Bakasura. This is a heavy one. That's a heavy one. The anatta, which is in connection with Bakasura, is as follows. Bakasura represents churning duplicity, deceptive behaviors, and hypocrisy. The outward manifestation of a false lifestyle and cheating activities. That's a heavy one. So we will obviously again hear at the end of the Leela more about the anatta, but as we are hearing the Leela, we can also maybe get a glimpse of how Bakasura represent those anattas. So in his previous life, Bakasura was called Suhotra. He was a Gandharva disciple of Narada Muni. So that's, I think, one of the first demons who was actually not a demon in his previous life, who seems to be a devotee, disciple of Narada Muni. And Suhotra was making a pilgrimage in Pushkar Tirtha. And when he was there, he went to the lake, to the main lake of Pushkar, and started to pick up lotus flowers from the lake. And suddenly, the servants of Lord Shiva came to him and arrested him and brought him to Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva was very kind, but very clear. He said, "I'm really sorry, but one curse had been said for anyone who will pick up flowers from this pond, from this lake. Because my wife Parvati, she has made a vow to offer every day 1,000 lotuses to Lord Krishna. But there are only 1,000 lotuses a day. There are not more. And now you have taken some of those lotuses, and my wife Parvati cannot fulfill her worship. So the curse had been said that anyone who will pick a flower from this kund will get the body of an asura, will get the body of a demon. So that's a little pity, but that's what actually happened to Suhotra. He had to assume the form of a demon, and he had the form of Bakasura, which is the form of a crane. This, we get also a glimpse. We must be careful when we pick up flowers. Where do we pick up flowers? And there are actually few of those demons who got problems by picking flowers in the wrong place. We'll hear some more are coming in the future. So, the past times we heard with Vatsasura, any one of you remember what age had Krishna at that time?
Three.
So now it's little more going toward 4 years old. So at that time, Krishna, we heard at three in the beginning of Vatsasura how there were changes in his personalities, how he was now playing more restlessly with his friends, and his eyes were trembling when he was playing. So now at this age, Krishna accepted the flute as his dearmost friend. He astonished the people of Vrindavan by playing the flute. Whenever Krishna played the flute, everyone was just so astonished and so attracted by Krishna's playing that the gopis told Krishna, "Oh dear Krishna, your lips that previously tasted Mother Yasoda's breast is now relishing the soft notes of your flute. Which guru had taught you how to play so sweetly? Oh darling Krishna, if you play your melodious flute again, I will adorn your face with a beautiful tilak." So the gopis are just wondering, so astonishing. How did you do to learn the flute? Who was your flute teacher? And here is a very interesting question that we can ask ourselves. Who is Krishna's teacher for the flute? Two years ago we had a Serbian camp and Satchinandana Swami was speaking about Venugita seminar. And we had one evening where all sannyasis and teachers went together and we could ask questions to all of them. And one devotee asked the question, who is Krishna's flute teacher? And all the sannyasis were looking at each other, who will answer the question? and actually, no one answered anything on the spot because it's a little bit confidential. But some of them approached me later and gave me different answers. And obviously, who of you guess who is Krishna's flute teacher? Yeah, very good. Yeah, it is actually Srimati Radharani who is teaching Krishna how to play the flute. So there are different descriptions of Radharani showing how to Krishna how to play the flute. And she has also a flute and she's playing and she told him, play the same. So she plays something and wants Krishna to play the same. But Krishna sometimes purposefully play wrong. And Radharani is chastising him. No, but not like this. Here, here. And she plays again and Krishna again make it a little wrong. But Bir Krishna Maharaj says something very, very nice. He said that Srimati Radharani is teaching Krishna how to play the flute by love. Because Krishna loves so much Srimati Radharani that actually this love is coming through his lips and is actually teaching him how to play the flute. So through the love for her, Krishna is actually learning how to play the flute. Very deep, very beautiful explanation. Sometimes Krishna and Balaram and the friends will be playing outside of the house. And when Mother Yasoda will finish her cooking, she will tell Rohini, Rohini, you go and call the boys. It's time for their lunch. So Rohini will go and will keep some distance from the boy and will call them, please come, please come. Lunch is ready. But the boys will not care. They were so absorbed in playing, they will not come. So Rohini will come back to Mother Yasoda and will say, they don't listen to me, you have to go yourself. So Mother Yasoda will go, and she will go closer, and she will come, please come, please come. The meal is ready, but the boys still were so absorbed in playing, they will not come. So Yasoda had to use a trick to call them. Anyone knows the trick of Yasoda to bring Krishna and Balaram home for taking their lunch? That's a good try. Now Mother Yasoda would say, your father Nanda, he is already sitting down, but he cannot start without you, and he is overcome by pangs of hunger. You please come immediately so your father can eat. And then the boys had no other option. They had to come. So now we are in Kamsa's palace. And Kamsa heard about what happened to Vatsasura. Kamsa heard about his landing in the Kapita fruits tree. And Kamsa became very, very depressed. He started to close his eyes very tightly and then fainted. The minister of Kamsa came and brought him back to consciousness. And they said, don't worry, sir. Vatsasura blew it, but Bakasura. Bakasura is the ideal demon to take care of Krishna. Don't worry. And Kamsa just came to his consciousness and said, oh yeah, Bakasura. Bakasura, he's my only friend. Bhagasura will be able to do the work. Call here Bhagasura. So again, Kamsa instructed Bhagasura and told him how careful he should be. This boy is not an ordinary boy. You need to be very, very careful, and send him to Vrindavan. So Bhagasura had the form of a crane. He had long legs, was high, and had a very sharp beak that the crane used to kill its prey and then swallow its prey. Bhagasura was actually the brother of Putana. And he was very angry at Krishna for having killed his sister, Putana, previously. So he had a lot of anger toward Krishna. So there is one sentence introduction. As Krishna enacted his human-like pastimes, he looked very attractive, with a necklace hanging on his chest when he awoke just before sunrise. And after waking up, Krishna would call all his friends. He will collect all the calves, and they were ready to go to the forest. Each cowboy had a group of calf that they will take care of. So on that day, they brought all the calves to a big reservoir or tank of water. That was a very beautiful place. There were fresh grass and fresh sprouts for the calves to eat. And then the calf went to this tank of water, drank. And when they had finished, the boys went in that tank of water, took their own bath, were playing there. And when they came out of the water, they dressed themselves and they saw there was a beautiful tree full of flowers. So they got the idea, let's go pick a flower and decorate each other with those flowers. So they went to the tree and they started to pick up the flowers. And suddenly, through the branches of the tree, they saw something strange was there behind the tree. They looked at it and it looked like a broken mountain. And they were wondering, what's that? We never saw such a thing here. And one of the cowboys said, this is not a mountain peak. This is certainly another demon. Another demon in a crane form. He has a sharp beak and he's ready to attack us. Here is a very beautiful analogy. As a baby snake approaches a frog out of curiosity, Krishna, surrounded by his boys, holding raised sticks, approaches the demon. Like the snake approaching a frog out of curiosity, Krishna was now approaching the demon, and all the friends were there around Krishna with raised stick and ready in case that was really a demon. Krishna glanced at his friends with a delicate smile that captivated their minds, saying, don't worry, everything will be all right. And right at that time, when they came close, suddenly, the demon raised on his leg and started to attack the boys. The boys ran all around, and the demon had the lower part of his beak on the floor, and the upper part of his beak seems to reach the heavenly planets and was running toward them like to swallow the whole world. All the boys ran away in great anxiety, and then suddenly Bhagasura swallowed Krishna in one bite. When Balaram and the other boys saw that Krishna had been devoured by this gigantic duck, they fell on the ground unconscious, like without life. Some were screaming, alas, alas, what disaster! Although Balaram is very strong and can do everything, he became, due to his intense affection for Krishna, he became momentarily bewildered about what was going on. And Prabhupada gave a very beautiful purport. He said that for a devotee, to be separated from Krishna is the most painful experience. Because for the devotee, Krishna is in the center of their life. So when they lose Krishna, it's like they lose their own life. It is like a fish which is out of the water, cannot live without water. In the same way, the boys who are feeling without Krishna. So Bakasura was trying to swallow Krishna. He was putting his throat straight to somehow make Krishna go deeper in his throat. But suddenly he found out that Krishna tasted horrible. Although Krishna's body is sweeter than sugar cane, Bakasura tasted Krishna to be extremely bitter. And he felt Krishna becoming like very, very intense fire. And he became very, very trembling, and he became like very, very alert. What should I do with this Krishna in my throat? And suddenly, whoop, he disgorged Krishna. Krishna came out of the mouth of Bakasura like a young lion coming out of a cave. Krishna came out of the mouth of Agasura like a devotee coming out of the dark well of material existence. The clothes of Krishna were totally, were not at all dirty. Although he had passed through the old throat of the demon, the clothes were totally, perfectly folded and without any dirt. Krishna looked fresh and beautiful, and he went to his boyfriends and he whispered some loving words to their ears, saying, I'm here, don't worry, you can come back to your senses, I'm here, I am saved. But the demon immediately started again to attack Krishna and took Krishna in his beak and was trying to press Krishna inside his beak. And at that time, Krishna took the two parts of the beak of Bakasura and bifurcated him. He just like separated the body of Bakasura in one move. Rivers of blood flowed in all directions. And the two parts of Bakasura's body looked like two mountain peaks lying on the ground. At that time, the demigods showered a pushpa malika, a rain of malika flower falling down on the cowboys. They also congratulated Krishna for his work or for his activities by playing celestial kettle drums and conchal and offering prayers to Krishna. Filled with wonder, all the friends of Krishna said, "Oh, you are back! You are back out of the death. The mouth of death." They glanced at Krishna with thirsty eyes to drink the nectar of his beauty. They were also looking all over Krishna's body to make sure that Krishna's body was safe, that he had not been wounded anywhere. They embraced Krishna and they collected their cows and went back to the village of Vrindavan. They were running and running toward the village of Vrindavan. And though they were very tired and breathing heavily when they arrived in Vrindavan, they tried their best to explain Krishna's exploits. Exploits, do we say? Yeah. Yeah. due to exhaustion, their voice were shocked up, and they sounded very sweet and satisfying to their parents. When the Kaurava men heard about how Krishna had killed this demon, this Bakasura demon, they were very, very much astonished. They look at Krishna like he could have been killed, and now he's still here and we can still see him. They were appreciating so much him to be still alive. They did not want to turn their eyes anywhere else. They were just looking and looking at Krishna. Some could not understand that it was Krishna who had killed that demon. They said, as soon as the demon had approached Krishna, he was himself killed by his bad activities, like a bee going, which is attracted by the fire and it's burned into the fire. That was the demon situation, that some thought. Nanda Maharaj was thinking, wow, it's so wonderful. All what Gargamuni has predicted is now coming through. And in this place, Prabhupada writes very, very beautiful purport. He said that now in Vrindavan, everyone were just speaking about Krishna's activities. So he said, everyone enjoy the topics about the pastimes of Krishna and Balaram with great transcendental pleasure. And they could not even perceive material tribulation. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda appeared like ordinary persons, but they never felt the tribulation of this world. This is a practical example. If we follow in the footsteps of Nanda Maharaj and the Gopas, we can all be happy simply by discussing the activities of Krishna. So here Srila Prabhupada makes it so clear that when one is engaged in hearing or speaking about the activities of Krishna, then all the material tribulation are actually totally eradicated. And Prabhupada mentioned, this is, we should follow in the footsteps of the bridge passes. We should do like them, to all the time speak about Krishna, all the time hear about Krishna, all the time remembering his activities. I had such a beautiful example of that when I was preparing this seminar. One day I got a phone call from a devotee who has big problems in his spiritual life. And for half an hour, this devotee was explaining how difficult the life was for him, and I was trying to help him, but after half an hour I just felt like totally finished. I closed the phone and I thought, now I need to eat something. So I went down in the Prasadam room, and there was Krishna Karuna, one devotee from our temple. And Krishna Karuna said, so how is your work on your seminar going? What did you study today? So I just started to tell all I had studied about Krishna Lila. And half an hour later, everything was totally gone. All this weight I had on the shoulder, all those tension, everything was just totally gone by the power of speaking about Krishna. And I must tell you honestly, in my life, these studies of Krishna Lila and speaking about it and hearing about it is just like amazing medicine for those material tribulation. Is very, very powerful shelter where I can feel all those material tribulation are going away. There were some coward men that were living in some other villages, and they will sometimes come to Braj, and they will approach Nanda Maharaj and they will preach to him. They will say, Nanda Maharaj, you are already 50 years old. Half of your life is gone. You need now to practice tapasya. You need now to study shastras. why are you all the time absorbed just in your family and your son and your son and your son? You should now become serious in your spiritual life. But Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda Mahi just could not understand what those men were saying, and they were just remaining totally happy in their worship of Krishna. There is a very beautiful verse that further underlines this point. The verse explained that when we develop attraction for hearing about Krishna's glories and chanting his holy name, from within our heart, Krishna cleanses our heart from all those anatta, from this greed, lust, anger. So Krishna himself, when we speak about his glories, is taking place in our heart and is doing the seva of cleaning our heart. And Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, gave a very nice example of that. When he was very small boy, he went to the house of Advaita Acharya, and there the devotees were sitting together and were speaking about the glories of Krishna. So when Nimai came and heard that they were speaking about him, he felt just so happy that he arrived there and he started to spread his lavanya, his effulgence, his beautiful effulgence to all the devotees. And the devotees became just like stunned, just could not even speak anymore. They were just so overwhelmed by the beauty of Lord Chaitanya. And then Lord Chaitanya disappeared, and they were still stunned. They were just still unable to speak. Krishna had been, or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had been, so happy to see how they were engaged in speaking about his glory, that he was just like showing himself, manifesting himself to them. We know also about Parikshit Maharaj. Parikshit Maharaj had received the curse to die after 7 days, because he was so hungry, he was so thirsty, that he asked a Brahmana and did not get water, and then he placed the snake around his head, and then the curse came. The old story is there. But as Shukadev Goswami was telling him the Srimad Bhagavatam, days were passing and Maharaj Parikshit was not eating or drinking anything. And then at some time Shukadev Goswami asked Maharaj Parikshit, maybe you need a little break? Maybe you need just a sip of water or just a little something? But Maharaj Parikshit said, no, I don't even want that. I just, please, don't stop. Please go on with the recitation of Krishna's pastimes. This is my life. This is what I want. And then Maharaj Parikshit understood, actually, I got cursed because I was so thirsty and could not control that. But now I'm just totally beyond hunger and thirst. So this is another example of being out of dualities of life just by the power of hearing about Krishna's glories. When Yasoda Mahi heard about what happened with Bakasura, she was slightly relieved and smiled mildly, but she was thinking in herself, alas, even though I left Mahavan to escape the demons, they are still attacking my bold and restless son. But what can I do? And where can I go? By destiny, I am confused and cannot understand the plan of providence. Yasoda told Krishna, I don't let you go anymore in the forest. It's much too dangerous. Much too dangerous. Krishna said, actually, Mother, all what you hear, they are just lies. It's not really happening. Mother Yasoda put it Krishna in bed and went away to do her activities. So there is, that was for the Leela. There is a very, very nice comment about, from Garga Samhita, about what happened to Bakasura before he attacked Krishna. In the past, that's very funny. In the past times, when the boy were picking flower and saw Bakasura behind the tree, he looked like a broken mountain. But why was Bakasura looking like a broken mountain? What had happened before? So when Bakasura came to this pond of water to wait for the boys, the demigods understood, oh, here is a demon. He wants to do something bad to our Krishna. We want to give him some heavy time. So Indra came the first and took his thunderbolt and knocked Bakasura on the ground. Brahma came and hit him with his Brahma Danda and knocked Bakasura unconscious for 48 minutes. Shiva came and struck Bakasura with his trident, cut off one of Bakasura's wing. Vayu came and struck him with his big wind and flew Bakasura away. Yama came and with his Yama Danda struck Bakasura. Kuvera came with a sword and cut off the other wing of Bakasura. So now he is already without two wings. Then Soma attacked him with the ice weapon. Tormented by cold, Bakasura fainted. Then Agni came and attacked him with the fire weapon and burnt all Bakasura's feather. Then Bhadrakali came and hit him on the head with her club and broke his head. He fainted and went into a deep coma. But then Bakasura came up again, shook himself and roared like a cloud. Then Kartikeya came and threw his Shakti weapon and cut one of his legs. Then Bakasura took all the strength he had and started to run toward the demigod, and they all flew away. So this is a little bit what happened before, how all the demigods tried to give a heavy time. But there is actually another lesson behind that, is that although all demigods were trying to somehow kill Bakasura before he could make any harm to Krishna, they could not do. But Krishna could kill him. And this shows that all the demigods, they might be very nicely intentioned, but don't have actually the power that Krishna alone has. So this was for the Leela part. So I would like to see if you have any, if you like to comment or say anything on the Leela. Any points that were interesting to you?
Could you summarize anatta, duplicity, hypocrisy, cheating activity, and the dust?
Yeah. Duplicity, deceptive behavior.
What does it mean, deceptive?
Deception, huh? Yeah. Hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's a little complicated, but here it's written the outward manifestation of a false lifestyle. Like false lifestyle and cheating activities. I will develop on the anatta in 1 minute.
There was one point in the Lila that is very beautiful, that when Krishna was swallowed by Bhagasura, he came out again and his cloth was perfect, perfectly folded, nothing on it. That shows the nature of Krishna. He's always presenting very nicely and like an artist.
Radharani taught Krishna to play the flute, and Krishna was 3 years old. And as far as I know, Radharani did not get to know Krishna yet at this age. I thought she saw him for the first time by Govardhan Leela. Krishna was how many years old? 4 or 5 years old.
That was definitely after, There are things, there are different scriptures that give different informations. But for example, Garga Samhita explained that Krishna and Radharani met already when Radharani was just born. And Krishna and Nanda Maharaj, they came to Vashana, and Krishna climbed on the cradle of Radharani, and then she opened her eyes, because the first person she wanted to see was Krishna. So there are different scriptures that give also a little bit different comment. Also, Gopal Champu, Sanatan Goswami, explained that it was actually at the Kali Alila that the gopis saw the first time. So there are different versions that are a little bit, but definitely Krishna's Krishna's pastimes are unlimited, and from one scriptures or from one pastimes happening in one material universe or in another, it might be a little bit different. But obviously, when Krishna plays flute, it has very very deep effect in anyone who hears that, and it's definitely pure love coming out of his heart. And most of the time we hear that Krishna in playing flute is, those who get the strongest effect from his flute are the gopis, even though there might be a little some distance, or we don't hear so much about the gopis at that time. I think that was still his love for the gopis that was like the strongest influence for Krishna while he was playing the flute. But it's a good question. It can be questionable, because at that time we don't hear so much, and they are very young. I mean, 3-4 years, they might not think so much of the gopis as at this age. So it's a good question.
It was in the spiritual world. Around him in spiritual world here.
That's also a good perspective, because obviously Krishna is eternal, and he's not taking birth or growing in the spiritual world. He's all the time the same age, but when he's coming in the material world, in the Naimittika Lila, in the occasional Lilas, then Krishna seems to take birth and seems to grow, but this doesn't exist in Nitya Lila. In Nitya Lila, Krishna is all the time the same age. And maybe from Nitya Lila, the Nitya Krishna and Nitya Lila actually learned from Krishna, from Radharani, how to play flute. And when he comes down to the world, although he's not yet with the gopis, but he knows already how to play flute, because he learned it from Radharani, from the Nitya perspective. That's also interesting perspective. It's good, because in one sense it's very difficult to understand Krishna, but at the same time it's our duty to keep our mind connected with him and to think of him. Like, I was visiting a Yoga Vidya studio and speaking with the responsible devotee there, and I asked him a question about, there was different rooms, like a Shiva room, a Ganesh room, a Krishna room, and so I asked, what is the different moods that those rooms have. And he told me, actually, it's almost impossible to know anything about God. God is just so much beyond everything. So therefore, we study more God through the different aspects like Ganesh and like this. And we hear sometimes also in our scriptures that Krishna is far beyond our material understanding, that we actually cannot grasp Krishna with logic or with our mind. But just by doing the exercise of keeping our mind thinking of Krishna and questioning this type of question, is we engage our thought abilities in Krishna consciousness, and this has the effect to purify. And then as more as we think of Krishna, as more as we try to understand him, as more he's also revealing, obviously through the whole process of devotional service also. But even though sometimes it's quite beyond our understanding, it is still very good to keep on questioning and keep on thinking on those points.
Better these questions
than other questions. Yeah.
And what was the result, Bakasura, of God? What was it? Not mentioned? You read it somewhere?
I did not mention anything in this part. I have like a short version that I go through when I give the lecture, and I had a more elaborate version. And usually Garga Samhita give often the destination of the demons, where do they go, and most of them actually get Sayujya Mukti, like merging into the Brahmayoti or something like this.
That was my question, because you mentioned he was a devotee before, so I thought of maybe
then maybe got some I might need maybe to look the bigger version to see. And yeah, this is a little bit tricky, this previous life of Bakasura, just by picking a flower in the wrong place, that he has to become a demon is a little heavy to digest. But at the same time, he gets the chance to be directly in contact with Krishna and to somehow assist his pastime. Even though he is fighting against Krishna, but without him, Krishna could not do such a beautiful activity. So it's actually Bakasura is actually enhancing or helping the Leela to go. He's actually serving Krishna in his demon form. That's a little bit mysterious, because again we have our perception from the material dimension, from a dual perspective of good and bad, and this is really like beyond this perspective. So it's not always easy. In one perspective, we could say liberation is great; he's got liberation, wonderful. But from another perspective, we will say, "Oh, I don't want liberation. It's not so nice." There are many different perspective that comes in the it's little mysterious.
And my Guru Maharaj told that one cannot describe Krishna the same. So Radharani would describe him one way and Lalita would describe him another way. So if you just hear this description and this description, and it is controversial for us, it is not a real controversy. In different ways to different.
May I ask who is your Guru Maharaj? Thank you.
He told today morning that as soon as one gets through anatta nibbiti, and then the devotee can really relish Krishna consciousness, and the curtain of spiritual world are open. How can one know that this process is over? I read that even acharyas, they thought of themselves that their hearts are dirty and they don't have any love to Krishna. And even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told that I have no love to Krishna. And how can the devotee know that the anantam is over? Or is it a long life process? You just must think that it's a long life process and it's
it's definitely something progressive. Very often we see, okay, sadhu sangha, then what's next? Okay, then bhajana kriya, and then what's next? And we feel like they are cut part that, okay, now like we enter in another room and close the door and we have passed, we are now in the other room. But it's definitely like fading into each other. Like we might still have anattas, but as we progress they become less and less. And as they become less and less, we get more taste in our spiritual life and more attraction. So it's going very progressively into the next level. Now we hear also that until we come to bhava, there are risk of falling down. So that means they are still, I mean, anatta must be destroyed, but there is still some maya or some type of attraction or some type of covering that can come over the soul. I think we can definitely feel where we are in connection to how much taste we have in our own practice. It's a good barometer to see how much are we still under the influence of the anattas. Definitely for the great souls like Mahaprabhu, and as more as they progress, as more they feel humble. And when they feel humble, even though it's maybe not really the case, they just feel it like this. They just feel it, I'm not actually not a devotee, I'm not actually able to do proper service. And but this is really like a deep true humility that they are feeling. It's, I don't think they are actually under the influence of anattas or things like this, that just the humility that make them speak like this. Yeah.
Is there any picture of
Rakhine? Yeah, we see sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes we see deities of Radhan Krishna and we see Radharani holding a flute. And I saw pictures of Radharani also having the flute. And that hints actually to this time when Radharani is teaching Krishna's flute. Krishna how to play a flute, yeah.
Is it possible to see it?
How is it so? I just remember that recently someone was showing me a picture of Radharani Krishna and I felt, oh yeah, very nice. But I did not notice that Radharani had a flute. And then the other devotee said, look, and Radharani has the flute. And said, oh yeah. But I think nowadays with internet, devotees have like big files with a lot of pictures. I think if you ask someone who has a computer and has picture, you can just go through and you will get, I guess you will even get few where Radharani is also holding the flute. Deities is actually quite rare. It's actually quite rare because often Radharani is having the blessing mudra and holding a tampula or a basket or like this. But sometimes I have seen that the pujari will put a flute in the hand of Radharani, the left hand where she often has a basket. But it's rare. It's very rare. And it's not usually the what we do in our ISKCON temple. The pujari might be chastised by the head pujari if they do that. it's not something usual. It's not something usual. Maybe it's somehow, maybe for a festival it might come up or like this. There is a description by a saint of the Vallabha Sampradaya about Krishna being taught the flute by Srimati Radharani. There is a poet that was called Krishnadas from the Vallabha Sampradaya, and he was writing poetry. And in one of his poetry, he mentioned how Radharani is teaching Krishna how to play the flute. Good, so should we go into the anatta, or is it maybe too heavy and we should skip it? So Bakasura represent churning duplicity. Churning means to act in a dishonest way. That means we are acting very nicely towards someone externally, but our real goal is actually to do harm to this person or to do something bad to that person. It's also when we say something, but we mean something else. We are saying something, but we mean something else. Or we mislead other people for some particular motives. This is this churning duplicity. Dishonest duplicity. This is a very serious anatta that we should pray for removal. So once a devotee asked me, what's the relationship between the anatta and between the crane? Why is the Bakasura representing this anatta? And I remembered about Guru Govinda Swami, who was giving the example of how the crane is duplicious. And the analogy is that the crane is standing in the middle of the lake, and he look like very, very austere, very, very sense-controlled. But he's looking down the water, and as soon as a fish comes through, he's killing the fish. As soon as the fish come, he has to give up his false sense control attitude. So Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj explained this duplicity in our behavior, or often in not accepting the place that where we are fit to, and he's mentioning that in connection with the ashrams, explaining maybe brahmacharis who are not properly situated in their ashram, but they say, yeah, I am a brahmachari, but their mind is wandering on the opposite gender or like this. Or sometimes Tusi Grihasthas who wants to live very, very renounced and very, very austere life in their Grihastha ashram, which is also sometimes not possible for the other partner in the couple. So there are sometimes cases like this which are mentioned by Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj also as type of duplicitous behavior of not accepting what our real position is. And maybe many devotees tell you, Prabhu, you are not properly situated. But we think, no, I am properly situated. And we keep on in this mode. Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj explained also the duplicitous propensity by using the robe of renunciation to be dressed in saffron color, but just for the goal to get money, to receive money, and or to have to take sannyas order just to get disciples. This is also a type of duplicity. And he's explaining that often in India you see sadhus who are doing austerity, who are dressed in saffron, but they are just looking at the bowl where the donations are coming, and they are just fixed on receiving donation. That's there. So this is this duplicity. So this anatta is very subtle, and it can very easily enter in our life. And I would like to tell you something that happened in my own spiritual life in that connection. We had a Griha Pravesh ceremony in Berlin. We have devotees who have the Veda Academy, and they have a big castle there, And we did a puja, like a yagya, to inaugurate the place. And my Guru Maharaj was engaged in doing the yagya things, and he asked me to lead bhajan, to sing bhajan during the evening. And then later we drove back to our ashram, and Satchinandana Swami told me, "Oh, Gaurahari, you sang very nicely this evening." And usually he will never praise me, and I felt very happy. I said, "Oh, thank you, Guru Maharaj." And then he said, "But I think now you should learn to chant for Krishna and not to chant for yourself." Oh, that was a thunderbolt. And then I just review a little bit, and I noticed when I was chanting, I was hoping that the devotees around me will like my bhajan, and that I was actually wanted to get the benefits of the bhajan for myself. I was not thinking that this was to glorify Krishna. I was thinking, hopefully others will love me and appreciate me the way I'm singing. And that was actually very, very deep. I thought I'm actually stealing what belongs to Krishna. I'm singing, and this should be given to Krishna. And now I try to use this singing so that I am in the center. So this is also very, very deep example of duplicity. We are acting in Krishna consciousness, but sometimes we are trying to use Krishna consciousness for our own ego, for our own recognition. And this is very deep anatta that is there in many, many devotees. And that's, I think, very, very important for the devotees. As we become more mature and as we are progressing more in devotional life, that we become very, very careful where our mind is, and that we don't actually try to take Krishna's property for our own self, but always make sure that Krishna is really in the center. Shruta Kirti, the servant of Prabhupada, Shruta Kirti was serving Prabhupada for a long time, and he explained a very nice story that happened. When he was serving Srila Prabhupada, there was Brahmananda, one great sannyasi, and one day Brahmananda, I think it was Brahmananda, I hope I remember well, but one of the great sannyasis approached him and he said, "I would like to have Prabhupada's chador, his ma chador, I would like to have it for me. So I have here a new chador I want to offer to Prabhupada, and when he don't use his old, you give the old to me." So this new chador was very, very beautiful, like first class, first quality. It had cost really a lot of money. So Brahmananda came to the room with Prabhupada and gave him the chador. Prabhupada looked at the chador, said, "Oh yeah, thank you," and they just throw it in the back, you know, like it was just a simple piece of cloth. And he actually did not change his chador. He kept the one he had. So Shruta Kirti was developing the desire. Actually, it's a good idea to have the chador of Prabhupada. I also will try to have Prabhupada's chador. So later they went to Vrindavan, and Shruta Kirti went to the shops in Vrindavan and bought exactly the same chador that Prabhupada had. And he went to Prabhupada and he said, "Oh, Prabhupada, I have bought a new chador, but I think I should not take it for me. I think I should give it first to you. I think you should take this new chador." And Prabhupada said, No, you keep, you use it for yourself. You need, most probably you need a chador, you would not have bought if you don't need. You use it." And Shruta Kirti was trying, you know, "No, Prabhupada, you are the guru, we should offer first what to the guru. You please accept this." And Prabhupada said, No, you take it. And then Prabhupada looked at him and said, "Do you want my old chador?" Mm-hmm. And then Shruta Kirti said, "Yes." and Prabhupada could see he was duplicious. He was trying to say, no, Prabhupada, you are the spiritual master, you should have first. But in his mind, he had something else. In his mind, he was, I want your channel, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada could see this duplicious, and in his kindness, Prabhupada just said, do you want my own channel? So this is the anartha, this duplicious way that we are acting toward others to get what actually we are looking for ourselves. Another type of duplicity is to accept a certain position in life without accepting the responsibility of this position. That one just accepts it like one accepts to be a temple president for having maybe the best room of the ashram and some other facilities, but one actually do not fulfill the responsibilities of one's position. There was the story of one sadhu who was giving Bhagavad Gita lecture, that was in India, and one other sadhu came to him after the lecture and he asked him, what are your mystic powers? And the devotee was very humble one and he said, I have no mystic power. But the other one was, yes, you must have mystic power. My guru has so many mystic, you must have. And then the devotee said, my mystic power is that I eat when I'm hungry and I sleep when I'm tired. And this is very difficult to do for many. And this is also a very, very interesting point where duplicity can bring us, that we pretend to be very renounced. Like Guru Govinda Swami gave this example of, you are taking prasad and the devotees come to serve you and you just crave to have more sweet. And they come with the rasgullas and you look at them and the devotee who serve, you take more? You say, no, no, actually I'm fine. No, actually I'm alright. This is a type of duplicity. So Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati was saying, this simplicity, which is actually seen often as the opposite of duplicity, this simplicity is what Vaishnava means. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati was saying, Vaishnava means simplicity. Simplicity is such an opulence. It means to act without a personal agenda, that we are not doing anything for getting a personal gain out of it. Yeah, that's what I have on this anatta. So it's very, very subtle. It can very easily enter into the devotee's heart and manifest this anatta. And there also we need to be very, very much praying, like we heard in the beginning this morning. Bhaktivinod Thakur advised that one should be praying and begging for the removal of those anatta, and that should be done actually in a daily basis. Every day we should be praying for removal of those anattas. We were mentioning when we are chanting Nishinga mantra, it's actually very, very good time to pray for that. So do you have any questions or any more comments on the anatta itself?
Yeah,
it is, yeah. What is important is the connection between our mind, that we think of it, that we are connected with our thought, with the pastime. This, when this correlation is there, then the work is acting. Obviously, the whole process of Krishna consciousness go together. The whole chanting and all we are doing, service and surrender, and all that goes together. But yeah, it's mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that by meditating on those Naimittika Lila, those specific pastimes of Krishna in this world, they are helpful to remove those anatta. A little more help. It's like another extra option for helping it to be removed.
Srila Prabhupada gave instruction to Prakadananda Swami to read every day Krishna book, something from Krishna book, and he's reading for 14 years already every day Krishna book, and he knows it by mind. If one says to him, page 25. And he just says
what is on the page. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He always has taste of that. Mm-hmm. Not only because Srila Prabhupada taught it, but also because he taught it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great example. Prabhupada said also that if we read Krishna book regularly, then we will be able to see Krishna everywhere. Because all that we hear comes into our mind, and then all what we see around just reminds us of that. And I had once this example that was very nice with the Shakatasura demon. I was studying that demon, and in the Lila, Krishna kicked the cart, and on the cart were a lot of pots and spoons, and everything fall on the ground and make a big noise. And I was studying that Leela, and then after sometimes I went to the kitchen to take breakfast, and I was eating my breakfast, and the cook suddenly, the pot slipped out of her hand and fell on the ground and made a big noise. And I was directly put into the Leela with the pots falling. And this is, Prabhupada was saying, when we read often Krishna book, then we can see Krishna everywhere, in all situation comes, it's just remind us of Krishna's pastimes. At the same time, obviously, we need also to develop to be very well versed into the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness. It would be wrong to just try to just be on the pastimes. I mean, I know it's not your case, but it's also important we get really the good understanding. But Krishna book is very nice because Prabhupada make really a lot of Siddhanta inside and really a lot of understanding how we should practice Krishna consciousness.
So these anattas, I never know when it comes and when not. So, but sometimes when maybe we think more about how to get rid of it. So trying to think of it. It doesn't mean that it will be so avoided, but to think of it. So, and sometimes the situations are coming, and maybe we can try to get rid of it before. Or when it's already happened, and for example, know that it was false. It was absolutely false. So this Simha mantra, when to chant it? When to chant it to get better?
Mm.
To get cleaner?
Mm-hmm.
For example, yeah, I know it's false. It was false. It's coming again and again, certainly different situations. What to do to get a bit more
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I understood the question, and mm-hmm. I think very often we need to see the anatta first, and then we can develop actually the desire to pray for the removal of it when it comes, and then we just feel sorry, like it happened with my Guru Maharaj telling me, like, please don't think for yourself. Then it was just so painful, and then I could start to pray on that. But obviously it brings us to a very interesting point of being introspective in our life, to observe how we are doing, to observe what we are thinking, to observe how we are behaving with others. And when we develop that, we can sometimes get it before it happens. Like once I remember, I was still young in Krishna consciousness. I was in the kitchen of the Zurich temple and I was help cook. And they have a big ventilation that make a big, very heavy sound all the time in the back. And the cooking had been done. We were now cleaning the pots. And there was a very nice devotee in the kitchen. So I suddenly thought, oh, I can switch off the ventilation so that this noise is gone. So I was there to switch off. And then I just waited until this devotee will look at me and will look that I was doing that so that he could say, oh, thank you, oh, very well done. And then I understood, no, that's not good. I should do it when he don't see me. And so time to time, if we develop this introspective behavior to observe what are our thoughts, why do we do this activity or that activity, then we can notice more when the anatta is there. But there is actually no time to pray for removal. That should be daily basis, every day, every... This is whenever, even if we don't see them, we should be aware they are there, and they might pop up any time. So this, you can really. But we should also be careful to not be all the time just meditating on those bad anattas. As soon as we come in contact with this position of being fallen, of having some difficulties or obstacles, the immediate turn is Krishna's mercy is there to take me out of this. We should not stay in this mood of, oh, I'm so fallen, or I have so many anatta, I'm so dirty. When we are at that stage, we immediately switch to Krishna's mercy and beg for the mercy.